everyone, this is Haley, co-host of the Pulse Podcast. My guest today is Buck Prokatich, head of Lyft Healthcare. Lyft Healthcare launched in 2016 as part of Lyft's broader efforts to improve access to medical appointments and address social determinants of health by removing transportation barriers to activities that promote better health. Buck has been instrumental in the development and the growth of Lyft Healthcare division since he joined in 2019, with notable partnerships with ChenMed, CVS, and Kroger Health. In this episode, we talked about how the company unlocked the hidden product market fit in healthcare enablement back in 2016. We chatted about Lyft Healthcare's innovative partnerships with companies like Best Buy Health and their expansion plans in the Medicaid program across the country. As the industry focuses more towards value-based care, we also explore Lyft Healthcare's alignment with the shift and its impact on addressing social isolation and loneliness, especially in the post-COVID era. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Hi, Buck. Welcome to the Pulse Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. Excited to be here.
Well, thank you so much. I'm personally very excited for today's conversation as well as a loyal Lyft Pink member and an inspiring future innovator in the healthcare space. Especially in recent years, hashtag big tech plus healthcare has been such a trending topic on campus, within and beyond the industry. Before getting to your experience as the head of Lyft Healthcare, we have a fun icebreaker question that we like to ask our guests. What did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, man. I mean, honestly, I wanted to be a basketball player, and I would still take anybody up on that offer if they actually had interest. But I think that day is probably past. I did see you guys had Mark Cuban a couple of weeks ago, though, so perhaps somebody over there can throw a word in. But no, seriously, that was, I mean, yeah, when I was a child, that was definitely the goal, the dream. I think on a more serious note, a more relevant note, it wasn't until really grad school, which coincided with the passing of the ACA, where I became more interested in healthcare and more on like my career trajectory I've been in the last, you know, 10 or so years.
Yeah, well, love the idea of the basketball player. We'll definitely try to reach out to Mark and see what we can do there. I'm sure some of us definitely dream about the same in our childhood. Great. So to kick us off, I wonder if you can give the audience some background on Lyft Healthcare's founding story. As some might argue, it's definitely a very interesting combination. Can you describe the moment or event that sparked the idea for Lyft Healthcare? And how does Lyft Healthcare's mission align with the overall vision for Lyft?
Yeah. So on the origin story, it was interesting. It was really one of kind of an undeniable product market fit where whether we liked it or not, we're going to be pulled into healthcare. So the story is, you know, the company started in 2012. That's when John and Logan started Lyft Inc. And then in 2016, our fraud wires were tripped. And we're trying to figure out why there were thousands of rides a day being ordered in Salt Lake City, but being dispatched in New York City. And upon a little bit of investigation, it was actually a transportation manager working on behalf of a health plan that was serving Medicaid and Medicare Advantage members in New York. And they actually were using dozens of burner phones that were thrown across the desk and like ordering Lyft rides at this point through the app to make sure that these patients and members could get to and from their medical appointments. So they had essentially discovered, let's just call it a better mousetrap, that in 2016 provided another access point for these members. I mean, the traditional approach back in that day was you called, and it's improved a little bit. Don't get me wrong, I want to disparage, but it's been a little bit of a slow roll. But how things were done, and to some extent still are, is you call days, weeks in advance. You get a pickup window and you wait for somebody to come. You don't get that modern, you know, Lyft-like experience. We get the full end-to-end visibility into the trip. So you're kind of waiting not too dissimilar from, you know, experience you might have with a Comcast or AT&T to get picked up. And obviously that can lead to a lot of challenges and a lot of downstream impact. So that, I think, was when the light bulb went out for Lyft. We're like, wow, we've got a real fit here. There's a real opportunity, and this is really attractive space for us to play. I think what we hadn't realized prior to that day in 2016 is that, you know, and this is, I think, pretty well documented now with Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, CDC, all sorts of academics putting reports out where there's somewhere between 8 to 15 million American adults each year who miss or delay necessary medical care strictly because they don't have a ride. And, you know, I think this is a little bit less the case today, but I think the challenge back, you know, in 2016 is before the social drivers of health and we got more attuned and aware of some of the challenges that these populations face, is a lot of us, even on the inside of the healthcare industries, thought more about healthcare as a, you know, $3-4 trillion monolith focused on the financing and the delivery of care, and sometimes underappreciated the fact that it's a lot of times these little, you know, $10 billion industries, a lot of times of which, you know, healthcare is really made up of hundreds and thousands of these little pockets that can truly move the needle and impact care, but perhaps were historically underappreciated. So that was kind of the spark of the event. Your other question in terms of the alignment to Lyft healthcare mission, which is a great question, because I will say it does, you know, when you hear initially Lyft in healthcare, hopefully it's less this today, but I think, you know, back in 2016, it was a little bit of a head scratcher trying to piece that combination together. But if you think about the mission of broader Lyft, it's to improve people's lives with the world's best transportation, right? That is the mission that John and Logan put forth. The mission of Lyft healthcare is improving health by ensuring everyone who needs a ride gets a ride, regardless of age, income, or ability. And those two things are rather synergistic, right? There's a lot of overlap between those two missions. This isn't necessarily, you know, GE becoming a financial institution and becoming a bank, right? This is, frankly, a pretty obvious leap. And I think that's demonstrated really with our origin story, where this is a very natural extension for Lyft. And, you know, let's be clear, Lyft has been very, you know, disciplined in terms of remaining a transportation-focused company, focused on North America, really focused on certain segments, use cases, and industries, and really doubling down on those. And I think healthcare is absolutely one of them. I think you'll continue to see disproportionate resourcing and investment to make sure that we can maintain the leadership level we've had to date.
Yeah, I really love the undeniable product market fit factor in this story and how seemingly a random incident unlocked a major use case in the company that didn't realize in the beginning. And I'm sure this is definitely what every startup founder dreams their product to solve. So were there any initial challenges facing in integrating healthcare logistics with Lyft's existing technology back then?
There were. I mean, yeah, the first step was to get people off their burner phones, right? That was not a scalable, sustainable approach. So it's a little a kid there, but, you know, once we uncovered, you know, the opportunity and the impetus for this, there certainly was work to be done. The way I would think about it is, if you think about the consumer side of the business, right, you've got a requester of the ride, the person actually taking the ride, and the person paying for the ride. That's all the same person on the core consumer use case. And the vast majority of the times, there's one access point and workflow to orchestrate all three of those personas, and that's a consumer app, right? So it's a bit more confined, a bit more consistent, and there's a lot of continuity in that example. You put that within the context of healthcare, and that is a very different use case. Those are all different people in terms of the requester, the rider, and the payer. All very different individuals or organizations. So if you think about it, the requester is going to be a social worker, a care coordinator, a call center representative, right? The rider is typically going to be an individual with on Medicaid or Medicare Advantage, a veteran, someone of that kind of profile. And then the payer is ultimately going to be a state Medicaid agency, Medicare Advantage commercial plan. You know, again, could be the VA. There's other pockets of, you know, could be a self-funding provider or health system, but all three different organizations and individuals, which means you have a lot of different breakage points there, a lot of different misalignments of incentives and communications and workflows that you've got to start to stitch together and provide visibility and transparency and tracking across all of those use cases. So there was quite a bit to re-architect. The other thing in the healthcare use case is you don't have the single access point where everyone's, you know, doing this vis-a-vis the app, right? It had to be shifted to a B2B platform accessible through a web portal or an API. But there was, you know, definitely work to be done. That said, I don't want to discredit the fact that it was absolutely essential, the fact that we could, you know, stand on the shoulders of Lyft Inc. to get us here. I mean, we absolutely leverage the core technology stack, the marketplace, you know, the driver network. And I think even that sequencing, right, from consumer to healthcare was essential. You could not have funded the technology stack and the nationwide on-demand driver network that we leverage today had you been going, you know, into healthcare first. You really had to do this cadence of consumer to healthcare. Now, there's some tweaking, don't get me wrong, and there's probably more than tweaking in the context of healthcare. You can't just take an off-the-shelf rideshare product and throw it into healthcare. There is quite a bit of work to be done, both on the technology side and the driver network, right? The driver network, there's additional compliance and background checks to make sure that these drivers are eligible to service healthcare. But the core chassis is the same. So I you know, definitely some customization and re-architecting, but it is not a surprise that we are standing on the shoulders of Lyft to get the position we've gotten. It was you know, an essential piece of the pie.
Yeah, we know it's never easy to start things new, not to even mention taking on probably one of the most unsolvable and challenging problem, healthcare, to Lyft's place. But to help us understand a bit more about Lyft's positioning in the overall healthcare space, can you elaborate on the unit's business model, particularly in the context of your B2B approach?
Yeah, and honestly, I would say this is the harder pivot for Lyft, or this was, right, back in 2016, the harder pivot. I think to the extent it was just a re-architecting the product and the technology, like, listen, that's the secret sauce of Lyft. That plays to our strength, that plays to our experience. I think perhaps the muscle that needed to be flexed the most was the shift to enterprise, the shift to B2B, and specifically the shift to healthcare, because let's be clear, healthcare is a unique market in many, many ways. So, and yeah, there's obviously, I'm sure you well know, plenty of examples where you had incredibly modern, delightful consumer tech companies come into healthcare with giant aspirations, only to kind of fizzle out and you know, pull back and go back to their core focus. And, you know, to be clear, I understand that pull to come into healthcare at some point for some of these organizations becomes a law of large numbers where you've got to, it's 18% of GDP. It is so large, and on from the external side, it looks like it's ripe with opportunity. That said, it is not an easy pivot to focus on B2B enterprise, specifically healthcare. So I think it is kind of a real feather in our cap that we've been able to pull it off. Just to kind of paint the analogy, I think if you think about the consumer side of Lyft, you know, which is obviously B2C, it is focused on very quick, simple transactional decisions, right? You put that in the context of Lyft Healthcare, and obviously now you're starting to talk B2B, it is very different, right? You're talking complex buying decisions that require deep, trusting relationships. These can be 7, 8, 9-figure contracts and deals. So a lot of thought goes into these, deep customization, deep integration from an API perspective. So that entire go-to-market needs to change, right? So that was, you know, definitely part of that shift that you saw us take in 2016 to really build that team out with people that have very deep experience within the healthcare context to make sure we're doing that effectively. The thing that's the same is pricing, right? So pricing from a consumer and healthcare perspective, there's no difference in that regard. So that was one thing that was nice to keep consistent and familiar to those that were going to be using it.
Thank you for explaining to us. One thing that fascinates me personally about Lyft Healthcare is all the unconventional partnerships you had with new entrants like Instacart Health, Best Buy Health. Could you share a bit more on how have partnerships like those enhanced Lyft services in the overall healthcare space?
Yeah, I will say this has evolved a ton since, you know, 2016. I mean, if you go back to where we started, it started with an absolute land grab, right? We had a 2 to 3 year head start on our competition. We understood this was a very attractive market. We understood this is one that we were going to be very invested in. And frankly, it was go and integrate into every healthcare workflow possible, right? Every provider, hospital, health system, you know, transportation manager, go down the line of all the typical healthcare stakeholders that we wanted to make sure we were working with, even as far down into the digital health space. So think about EMR, CRMs, patient access, social determinant of health platforms, et cetera, et cetera. So it was very much, you know, land grab, get everywhere you can, make Lyft the default. Fast forward to today, our strategy and approach has changed a lot. And frankly, this is reality of, you know, we've got now 3,000-4,000 healthcare organizations leveraging our technology. We've become very selective. At this point, it's much less about kind of marketing and branding and making an announcement that we're in the space, and more so around, okay, what's the actual patient member impact? What's the business impact of doing this? Because obviously these integrations and these partnerships need to be not just established and contracted, but need to be maintained and enhanced over time. And to be clear, like, healthcare IT is not short of solutions, right? I mean, just look at the funding that has gone into the space over the last 10 years. I would just call it adequate, right? It's lacking great solutions, right, that truly move the needle. I think that's where we really wanted to make sure we were focused on our core and partnering around the edges to make sure that we could not get distracted and remain focused. You know, to give you some of the examples, and you called out Best Buy, I think that's a great example of, you know, where their focus is on that senior market. They're focused on, you know, and provide a couple of things that are really unique to them. They bring the Jitterbug phone solution, which is kind of a senior focused hardware phone. And then they have a wraparound call center services, right, to make sure that they can appropriately service that market, which are two things that are absolutely necessary. And also two things that are not core to Lyft. Like, we're not going to build a sustainable, durable advantage because we have, you know, hardware, e.g. phones, or wraparound call center service. This is not what we're great at, right? Similarly, you know, you mentioned Instacart Health and that whole food is medicine space. I mean, that is certainly having a moment. I feel like I can't wake up and not see, you know, a new prognostication on the impact in the market there. And we get that question. We get the question of, hey, Lyft, you have a very large healthcare footprint. You have a nationwide driver network that could obviously be extended into delivery. Like, what are your thoughts about this? Like, what do you want to do? And, you know, I think what we've kind of stuck with is like, listen, this is not about delivering an $18 burrito on demand. Like, that is not the food is medicine space. Like, we're talking in this space, like, medically tailored meals, produce boxes, culturally appropriate meals, dietitians, clinicians, nutritionists, all engaged in this process and making sure that they're getting the right ROI, the right engagement, the right utilization, and ultimately the right impact from these members. These, a lot of times, are mail order, right? That's the most cost-effective way to get these meals to these individuals, where sometimes it's even vertically owned couriers, right? So you're not only, you know, putting together meals, you're actually delivering based on your local density and your local footprint. And that's, again, these are taxpayer dollars funding these programs, and that is a very efficient way to make sure that gets done. So I go through that rant to say, like, you've got to be dedicated to the space. You've got to have you got to go very, very deep. This is not just, you know, hey, I've got this product, let me just extend it this use case, which seems to make sense on the surface. So to the extent these are partner capabilities and things that are not core to Lyft, which I would argue some of these, you know, in the food and medicine space is not, we're going to look to partner, right? I think, you know, someone like Instacart's a great example. And the beauty is, with modern tech and APIs, like, you don't have to do all this yourself, right? Like, the vast majority of our ride volume today from a healthcare perspective comes through API partnerships, meaning we are integrating directly into somebody else's native workflow, right? So to the extent our partners are like, hey, I want to bring a more comprehensive social driver of health sort of platform together, like, absolutely, like, let's get it done and we'll be part of that solution. So from a partnership perspective, and I think we've kind of banged on this drum for a while within Lyft Healthcare, it's like, let's collaborate, let's focus on what we do best. That's where patients get the impact. Let's stay incredibly disciplined. That whole phrase around go fast, go alone, go far, go together, I think is a very appropriate frame of mind when it comes to healthcare. And I don't mean to be depressing or disparaging, but like, fast doesn't work in healthcare. Like, very, very little is viral, right? When, you know, again, when we come from that consumer side of the business, we can miss that reality. I remember, this is like going back to one of my very first engagements when I was coming out of grad school in healthcare. And I remember I flew to Pittsburgh and there was a healthcare meeting, and I was meeting with Nancy Brown, who's become like a trailblazer, titan in the industry. And I remember she had sold her company a couple of times. I was super nervous, and coming out of grad school and just read the ACA and was, you know, all excited, and, you know, was excited to see the change and disruption and see the impact of the ACA and expansion of Medicaid and the launching of the exchanges and the individual mandate. And I remember she kind of like laughed and kind of gave me the, oh, well, that's cute. You think it's all going to change in the next year. And I think it was just, for whatever reason, it still sticks with me of like, it was a little bit of a reality call. Like, this is a very large, complex, frankly, at times plotting industry. I mean, you could go back, I mean, like a joke about this, but like you could go listen to a 2016, 2010 podcast on interoperability and value-based care and cost transparency, and then listen to one today, and you might not notice a dramatic difference. We're still talking about a lot of the same things. You know, it's like grocery stores, gas stations, and healthcare. It's a little bit, there should be a reality game of like, is it 1994, 2004? Sometimes it's hard to tell. And again, I don't mean to say that from a disparaging perspective. I mean, really to say like critically of, you know, companies like ourselves or others getting in the space, like, you know, the member/shopping experience in some of these industries has not changed. And I think the way we change that is we focus on what we do great. We partner with others and we work very collaboratively and focus on the patient impact and see how we get that done. So again, it's a little bit of a rant, but as we think about partnerships, we've become very, very selective, and knowing what we do and where we have an advantage and knowing where we need to partner with great organizations to extend the impact.
Yeah, so I thought it was very insightful when you mentioned remaining the core and pushing forward the edges. From a technical standpoint, look for these API integrations and focus on the strategic integration. And I love all these synergies and innovations that connect the consumers with existing infrastructure and technology services that we are already using on a regular basis. And I'm sure with more tech giants entering this space, we can expect even more groundbreaking partnerships this year. Buck, in our previous conversation, you mentioned Lyft Healthcare is also looking at value-based care. Help us paint the picture here. How does Lyft's model align with the shift from fee-for-service to the value-based care model in healthcare?
Yeah, I mean, I think the short of it is I think we're really, really well aligned. I'll give you an analogy. Like if you think about it in terms of two buckets. Bucket one is a fee-for-service provider. So put on that fee-for-service headset. And to the extent you're thinking about transportation, you're likely thinking about things like eliminating missed appointments, right? We know 20-30% appointments go unfilled. Number one, number two reason could oftentimes be transportation. You're also thinking about like, you know, patient throughput and clearing the discharge lounge and clearing the beds. And frankly, you're thinking about transportation from a tool tactical perspective, right? And to be more crass, you're thinking about it in terms of reimbursement, maximizing reimbursement, right? And that's not, is there anything negative? I think it's just the reality of the way the incentive structure is set up and no margin of mission. So, but that's bucket one, right? I think about if you put in bucket two, and let's just call that value-based care, right? And not, you know, a little bit of shared savings, you know, 1-2% around the edges, but true like global cap, you know, full risk, first dollars to the door. So at that point, you think about organizations like ChenMed, Cano, Oak Street, used to be IOR, One Medical, CareMax, Clinical Care. I mean, there's a number in that bucket, right? And when they're thinking about transportation, they're thinking about it very strategically, right? They're thinking about things like improving care adherence and, you know, getting people to their wellness visits and improving member satisfaction and star ratings and managing their total cost of care through, you know, reducing inpatient services, reducing ER visits, right? They're thinking about it very, very strategically. And if you think about the per patient spend in those two buckets, bucket one, fee for service, bucket two, value-based care, like those two things are not even close. The spend per patient in bucket two dwarfs anything in bucket one. And the reason being is they associate transportation with, you know, greater use of primary care, greater use of preventative care, lower inpatient utilization, lower ER visits, you know, more timely medical care among certain health conditions that require these repeat visits, things like dialysis, things like cancer, et cetera. So I think as you continue to see the shift, now let's be clear, like this is not an overnight shift. This is another one of those things we've been talking about for quite a while, but I do think that pendulum is continuing to swing. I think it's a good thing. And I say this a little bit tongue in cheek, but like if you're a provider who believes your services are valuable and that you're helping people manage their health and keeping people at home and out of the hospital, it feels very appropriate to, when you have members that fit into that bucket of, you know, the 10-15 million Americans who who can't access the carriage here, that you should be able to identify them and provide them the transportation they need to make sure that they're getting to your services. So as we continue to improve the identification of those individuals, the documentation of who they are, we can start to precision really provide some of this benefit and some of the value. And I say that to you, like, listen, the last thing we're advocating for is for, you know, helicoptering rides from the sky to commercial members. Like, you know, commercial members are able and have no barriers or insecurities around transportation, but there absolutely are in our community, or are people in our community that do, and we should make sure that we're getting them to that necessary care. So again, I think we will play a pretty big role in value-based care as it continues to go. And I think we've seen that to date and look forward to doing more of it in the future.
Yeah, certainly waiting for the helicopter day to come. One of the taglines from Lyft Healthcare is to meet patients where they are. And I think what we just heard fits perfectly with this mission from a personalized yet quality assurance standpoint. Speaking of this, can you share about the role and the impact you see Lyft Healthcare having on the problem of social isolation and loneliness, especially post the COVID times?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the short of it, honestly, we're doing work here today, but we're just scratching the surface. I mean, this problem is pretty massive. Yeah, I'll share some stats to just frame it up a little bit. CDC came out with, I think, a quarter of seniors are now identified to be socially isolated, which leads to a 50% increase in dementia, 25% increase in heart disease and stroke. So massive problem. And we know transportation could be part of the solution here, right? I mean, there was a survey a couple months ago where they looked at 20,000 Medicare Advantage members. Those that identified as socially isolated showed a 73% increase in being transportation insecure, right? Not having access to transportation. And I rattle off some of these stats and it becomes a little bit like obvious, like, yes, transportation and social isolation are linked. Like, that's pretty clear. And this is, you know, this is what we do. We talked about the Best Buy example. There's common courtesy. I mean, there's probably dozens of others in our book that we are focused, you know, on addressing senior mobility and getting people out in their communities. We did some research to highlight this a couple of years ago with AARP, United Health, and Kern Medical down in LA, where we gave Medicare Advantage members with a chronic disease access to Lyft for 3 months. And at the end of those 3 months, 90% said they wanted to continue to use Lyft. 35%, we saw a 35% increase in their physical activity as measured by Fitbit. And then 90%, more than 90% self-reported, you know, an increase in happiness, an increase in independence, an increase in kind of their quality of life. So I think it really just highlights that. And to be honest, it's part of the reason I really enjoy working at Lyft is this is kind of a byproduct of what we do. Like, so much of technology is about keeping people apart, right? Digitally engaged, virtually engaged, and keeping people kind of behind the screen. Lyft is the exact opposite, right? It just, I mean, anytime you're taking a Lyft, you're getting in the car with somebody else, you're going somewhere, a social event, an evening with friends, family. I mean, when somebody tells me, you know, I took a Lyft this weekend, the next question is like, great, where'd you go? Who'd you see? What'd you do? Like, there is a level of social, you know, engagement that is a byproduct of that. When somebody tells you, I spent the weekend on social media, you might not have, you might have a little bit more concern about the well-being, right? So some of this is, again, obvious. And I think shame on us if we can't do more in this space. I feel pretty confident in the coming quarters, you'll see more from us here. And we're really, really excited about the impact we can have.
Yeah, it's really inspiring to hear how Lyft is addressing this long-standing healthcare equity issue. And I love when you mentioned that Lyft is doing everything you can to fundamentally address this issue. As we come close to the end of our time, looking forward, what are the future expansion plans for Lyft Healthcare in terms of new markets or services?
Yeah, I'll try to give you two in each. So on the market side, listen, this market, non-emergency medical transportation, by far their largest segment is Medicaid, right? Like it is, that is truly where the biggest challenge is. It's probably 80% of the market. And in the Medicaid space, transportation is, has been a benefit since the 60s, the advent of Medicaid. And it was actually codified by Congress a couple of years ago to the extent it is now formally, cemented as part of the benefit. Now, each state kind of has its own flavor, eligibility and authorization, et cetera. But broadly speaking, if you're on Medicaid and you have a transportation insecurity and are unable to get to a necessary medical appointment, you're going to be provided that ride. Now, the challenge for us was back in 2016, almost until like 2018, 2019, we were in zero states, right? We had to go and work hand in hand with each state agency to become an eligible provider of non-emergency medical transportation. So we started in, zero states of the largest segment in this industry. Fast forward to today, we're in 23 states plus DC. I think we cover 60, 65% of all Medicaid members. So we obviously skew a little bit in the larger states. So tremendous progress, and we're not going to obviously stop at 23. We'll add a handful more this year. We think we'll continue to unlock more and more. We have a fantastic team. It's part of our secret sauce at Lyft, is that team that helps get us eligible to provide these services. So again, one huge opportunity for us is going to be continuing to expand our Medicaid footprint. Two, I'd give Lyft Assisted. So Lyft Assisted is a product we launched a couple of years ago. A partner of ours, ChenMed, came to us, and they were one of the risk-bearing, senior-focused Medicare Advantage providers, came to us and said, listen, we really enjoy the Lyft approach, but we would like kind of a differentiated higher level of service, more elevated level of service. And, some collaboration and input from them, we developed Lyft Assisted. Lyft Assisted is our door-to-door product. So the driver's going to stop, park, get out of the vehicle, wayfind up to the individual's door, knock at the door, offer an arm and elbow, help carry some of the belongings and escort that individual in and out of the car, both at the pickup and at the drop-off. So that's been a tremendous new product. We're now at 35, maybe up to 40 markets across the country today. Drivers have to go through a couple, additional tutorials to become eligible, and then they can get Lyft Assisted request. All the metrics have been up into the right. So everything you'd want to see on the rider-driver side to know this is really working well is what we're seeing. So we'll continue to extend that footprint. On the services side, and I'll kind of interpret that as, more of a technology question. I would point to two things. One, just the mobile app itself. Again, as I talked about before, the mobile app is not a requirement and a primary access point in the use case of healthcare. It can be, but it's typically not. But we do know that when the members engage with the app, the outcomes and success and the performance and satisfaction goes way up. They get all the bells and whistles, visibility, and everything that comes with the app. So we're going to continue to find creative ways to pull that into the app and still work within the ecosystem of, recognizing that this is a paid-for benefit by, the government, and there needs to be eligibility, authorization, and oversight around it. So there's some creative things we can do there where we can lighten the administrative burden, but also improve the member experience. So some very exciting stuff will come out around that. And then the other one I'd point to is, and I'm not going to utter the phrase AI at this point from business people. It feels a little bit embarrassing, but I'll just say along that line, we were sitting on 8 years of data from a healthcare perspective. When we get a request, we can oftentimes very well predict the outcome of that request, right? In terms of, the pickup process, the success of people showing up, getting there, et cetera. So we get, member facility, daytime, pickup, lat long, venues that are, mapped based on, having a complex healthcare location to navigate. So we can predict that outcome, and then we can nudge and optimize some of those levers to improve performance. So last year we reduced no-shows 35%, which is not a small number. So we've already started doing some of this. You'll see more and more of this. So I don't know, throw it in the category of, operational excellence. There's a lot we can do here and a lot more to come. So I'll leave it there to not spill too much, but there's quite a bit we can do in terms of extending our reach around markets and services.
Well, amazing. Looking forward to the growth in Medicaid as well as the continuous product iterations of Lyft Assist, more native data modeling and customizations on the mobile ad front. To wrap up our conversation, many of our audience is fellow MBA students with background in healthcare and technology. As they think about impacts they can make in the industry post-MBA, could you share what impacts you led in shaping Lyft's approach to transportation in healthcare during your tenure as the head of the division?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, when I took over, I believe it was 2021-ish, thankfully, I didn't have to change a lot, to be totally honest. I mean, I was standing on the shoulders of some incredible leaders, Megan Callahan, Gaia Renwick, others that were here that really built this team. So the train was on the tracks, right? There was a tremendous momentum in the business. And the other thing was there's tremendous talent. So there was really, you know, the focus that I had, to be honest, was one, you know, just keep doing what we're doing and continue to execute the strategy that was laid out. But two, keep the team together. We had a super talented bunch, super resilient, passionate, motivated, incredibly hardworking. So like that element of it, I really didn't need to overthink. I will say I was a little bit concerned when I took over. It was a couple of days or weeks into my tenure, and I remember reading, you know, the Great Resignation. We were embarking on the Great Resignation, and that talent was, you know, flocking all over the place and leaving their employer. And I remember thinking, oh gosh, well, this is a bit of a challenge to navigate. So thankfully we made it through that time, but that was really a huge focus of mine of like, listen, execute that we have the right strategy, the right approach, just keep the train on the tracks, but two, really focus on the team and make sure that we can keep this extraordinary talent. Where it give us a little bit of credit in terms of, you know, what we've done over the last, you know, couple of years is I think we've really become more and more customer obsessed. And where I would point that is, you know, coming into this space, a lot of us are frankly a little bit privileged in that, and I would say less so today. I think now like social drivers of health are rather in vogue and top of mind for most organizations, but especially in 2016, when we started like transportation insecurity, NEMT, you know, this stuff was foreign. This was pretty foreign to a lot of us to really understand, you know, the challenge here. And if you talked about access, at least, you know, in my days when I came here and I heard about access, my brain would immediately go to insurance, right? Like that's how I associated access. But in this context, we're really talking about like something more basic and foundational, which is like access, like, you know, the ability to actually get there, right? So again, part of this shift of, you know, customer obsession was like getting out there and really understanding what is going on. So we have a lot of immersion days. We've done things, you know, where we've, you know, driven, we've shadowed partners, we ride along with patients, do all sorts of things to make sure we're just developing more empathy in the work we do. You know, I'll give you some examples. You go drive a really complex medical facility and, you know, do a pickup, like you start to appreciate, you know, very precise lat longs, not generic Google Pass, but like very precise, you know, based on our historical pickups. You start to really appreciate venue maps, right? ER doors not the same as an oncology door is not the same as, you know, the dialysis exit, right? You really start to appreciate, I'm going to give you another one where I was driving and you had a rider who was going to their oncology appointment, didn't have a phone and we didn't speak the same language. And all of a sudden now you really appreciate the fact that you can share communication and location information with their caregiver, who was their son in Dallas, Texas, right? So you start to like develop empathy around some of these things through experience. And we take that back to our world-class product and engineering team. And, you know, what do you know, a couple months later, we've got that new feature and that widget to make the experience a little bit better. So again, where I'd give us credit is that element of customer obsession, right? And the beauty of what we do is like, listen, this isn't super complex medical science that we're talking about. Like a high income diabetic and a low income diabetic have the same underlying disease. They need the same treatment regimen. And our focus on this is merely making sure that low income individual has the ability to actually get to their necessary medical appointment. We don't need to really get into the biological element of it. This is a bit more, you know, tactical in our instance. So it's really something that we can get really close to the experience to really understand on a much deeper level to make sure we're improving and moving the product forward.
Well, thank you, Buck, so much for today's conversation and your vivid depiction of how improving healthcare fundamentally goes back to understand human beings and their day-to-day social behaviors, whereas life's bread and butter in the mobility realm. This is definitely an area that we hope to stay tuned on this year, and we look forward to celebrating more footprints and success of Lyft. Thank you for joining me.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me. I had a great time.